We are joined by a senior NFL writer for Yahoo. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is the co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. He is Therese Paylor. Therese, what's going on? How are you?
I'm fantastic, Jim. Thanks for having me on again.
Good to have you back. All right, so let me start with the Chiefs. It was announced last week that they were announcing the fifth-year option for Pat Mahomes. What was your reaction to that, and exactly what does that mean for his contract situation going forward?
It's what I expected. Most of the time, you know, you're going to accept that option when the player has fulfilled his obligation and lived up to expectations. Mahomes has obviously gone above and beyond in that regard. I also think that there will be an extension done with him. Obviously, the team loves the player. And I think the thing you have to remember is that the people who really push to help make him a member of the organization are the ones in charge. So typically when there's investment like that and buy-in, there's no real hesitation to pay a guy, right? So it's just a matter of kind of working it all out and getting that part done. But he does want to be a Chief for a long time. And they absolutely want him to be a Chief for a long time. So I really don't foresee a lot of issues as far as that getting done, as long as the climate, in the country, as far as the money situation with the league and the uncertainty in the fall doesn't, play like a huge role in it.
Therese Paylor joining us. You know, speaking of Mahomes, last week there was that documentary of Alex Smith detailing the injury he suffered in Washington and working his way back from that. For those who do not know Alex Smith, what's he like as a person?
Outstanding person, beloved teammate, professional. You know, I think, you've done it for a long time, Jim. So, you appreciate, the importance of being there every day and being accountable and, kind of leading from the front and having your teammates' backs and all that. And, I saw him do that, Alex do that every day for 5 years. I was a Chiefs beat writer at the Kansas City Star during his entire tenure there. And he was a beloved teammate. He was a guy that, no matter how tough the questions got, he always answered them. No matter how bad things got, he was always right there to answer the questions respectfully, answer them well, thoughtfully, right? He was the leader of that team, and that's why I think Mahomes got so much respect from his teammates when he first joined the team, and he was deferential to Alex because he respected that dynamic. And that's one of the reasons Alex was so willing to help him. And he was a great, great mentor for Patrick Mahomes the 1 year Mahomes sat. And I think that if you're a team drafting a young quarterback, you can't draw it up any better than the dynamic they had. So I was actually glad, Jim, that people got a chance to see Alex the person, Alex the leader, Alex the kind of resilient spirit that I saw for 5 years when he was the starting quarterback in Kansas City.
I agree with you. It's amazing what he's trying to overcome and the way he continues to battle and fight and grind, and what a great teammate he was there. Therese Paylor is my guest. All right, so let me quickly jump to Miami for a minute. I'm curious, Therese, about your thoughts. What do you make of how they approach their draft, and how do you think it's going to play out over this season and the coming years?
Jim, I love their draft. Listen, I spend a lot of time studying the game of football. I'm dorky like that, and I look at their roster right now, and I see, everything they kind of need in place to make that run in the next couple years. And I actually think they're going to be a little friskier than people think this year. A couple reasons for that. First of all, I watch a lot of football, man, and at the end of last year, I was even watching their games when the season was over and stuff. I was watching their games late in the year when they had no chance of making the playoffs. They were still playing hard. Jim, those guys are playing hard for Brian Flores, which I think really speaks well to him as a coach, and is a really positive thing if you're a fan of that team. And then I look at what they did in the draft, and I mean, listen, you draft Tua Tagovailoa, which is a risk, but if they hit on that pick, he could be the best quarterback in this draft. I said a couple years ago he had a little Steve Young in him, and at the very least is Mark Brunell, as long as he can stay healthy. There's a lot of talent in that guy, and what I like the most about it, though, is that they've started to give him an infrastructure to kind of build around him, right? With their next first-round pick, they took Austin Jackson, their future starting left tackle. With their second-round pick, they took Robert Hunt, who has Pro Bowl ability at guard. He could be a Pro Bowl guard. In the fourth round, they took Solomon Kinley, who can be a starting guard in this league. They spent money on Eric Flowers in free agency, and they drafted a guard last year in the third round of Michael Dieter, top 100 pick. This is how you build a team. You know, if you're going to draft Tua Tagovailoa with his injury history, you're going to want to put a young, stout offensive line in front of him. And the best thing is, it sounds like they also understand this. If you're going to draft that guy, you got to put him on the Mahomes plan, right? He sits the first year. He goes against a scout team. He learns what he can and cannot do with the added aspect of you building up his body, rehabbing the injury, so he gets to hit the ground running in 2021. And the thing I like about this plan, provided they can stick to it, all these linemen I just told you about will have gotten a year older, a year stronger, and they'll be more, they'll have some continuity then, and they have a better chance of protecting them. So I actually love their plan. I'm looking at their depth chart. I think there's a lot of talented young players, and you know, this is a team that's going to be a little more frisky than people think this year, and they're going to be able to challenge Buffalo next year.
Therese Paylor joining us. All right, then let me ask you about another young quarterback or two. What about Justin Herbert? How do you like that fit with Herbert and the Chargers and the weapons he's going to have around him?
You can argue that, you know, second to Joe Burrow, you know, he's got the best group of support. He's got the best supporting cast around him to hit the ground running. You know, so people sleep on Cincinnati because they were bad last year, but, you know, between A.J. Green, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and Johnny Ross and Joe Mixon, they're good there, right? But I'm looking at the Chargers, and it's like, hey, you know, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, I like that. I like that a lot for a quarterback in Herbert, who has a lot of physical ability but might not be able to carry you just yet. He has a chance to grow into that role. But between those guys and Austin Eckler, Hunter Henry, there's a lot around him skill-wise. I do have some concerns about their offensive line. I'm not going to lie about that. Trey Turner, they got him. I like him. But, you know, him and Bulaga, that's good on the right side, but they still got a big issue at left tackle. And this is not the league or the division to have that kind of issue. So they need Trey Pipkins to step up. But I like the fit because what he does well, he's a movement quarterback, big arm, can create with his feet. He just has to stop thinking so much and stop processing, start playing the game. I do think they can build an offense around his strengths, though. And I think if that offensive line could take a step forward, they can get more out of some of those young draft picks they've had the last 3 years on the interior of the line. That's got a chance to really work out. But they do need that line to come together for that to work.
Therese Paylor joining me for a few more moments. I've got to ask you also about the Eagles taking Jalen Hurts in the second round. Listen, they're not taking a quarterback in the second round. Just have this guy stand around for a few years. Assuming Carson Wentz remains healthy, which has been an issue, how do you think Doug Peterson uses Hurts this season?
I think Peterson's reaction during the draft after the Hurts selection tells us everything we need to know. He was sitting there beaming, smiling. Very excited. Now, I had a chance to cover Doug Peterson 3 years when he was in Kansas City as the offensive coordinator under Andy Reid. He's a very creative man, someone who reminds me of Andy in the sense that he really gets juice out of, like, calling up fun plays. That's what he's coaching for, right? We kind of got a sense of that in the Super Bowl win that they had, right? So I think people, and specifically Philly fans, you can't be short-sighted about what this is. This is not just Carson Wentz protection because we know that he gets hurt. I think there's an opportunity, a special opportunity here to kind of push the NFL forward offensively. Yeah, because of the way officials have started loosely kind of calling RPOs, like offensive linemen can run downfield and you can still pass it. But there's a real opportunity here to exploit this with two players on the field who are athletic and throw the football and can both throw the football. You know, you can, like, run combo RPOs, two or three of them on the same play. I actually think there's going to be Jalen Hurts packages, and I think we're going to see more of him with Carson Wentz than people think. Like, there is a way to line Jalen Hurts up next to Carson Wentz, run an RPO right there, and then somehow get the ball into Hurts' hands and run another RPO. Like, that's possible. And it's going to be really fun to see how the Eagles try to push this thing into the future, because I do think because of Hurts' body build, he's a stout guy, he's really strong in premium athleticism and ability to throw the ball. I think there's an opportunity here to really kind of push things forward offensively and create an offense where you got two quarterbacks on the field at the same time most of the time and defenses are struggling to adjust.
Therese Paylor joining us. All right, one last thought. I've got to ask you this, because watching The Last Dance last night, I was struck by how often that doc catches Michael Jordan smoking a cigar. And it's not just after winning a title. It seems like a pretty regular thing. I bring that up because a few months back, you did a piece on one of the most iconic athlete smoking photos ever, Len Dawson taking a drag on a cigarette during halftime of the first Super Bowl. What is the story behind that photo?
Epic story, epic photo, obviously. Basically, here's the thing. When I talk to people about that story, the thing we all have to wrap our minds around, the fact is that that was common. Like, that was a common thing. Like, it's a rather unremarkable story and a rather unremarkable photo to the men in that locker room, because it will be common to come into the locker room at halftime and, like, there'd be, like, a plume of smoke in the air. Guys would be smoking like that. That's just the times. That's just how it was. And I think that more than anything is what stands out to me. Like, I was talking to Ed Buddy about that and Bobby Bell and all these guys, and they're all just saying, you know, that's just how they did it back in the day. And I actually did start to get phased out, like, through the 70s. You saw less of it, and especially in the 80s when we all kind of became more knowledgeable about what was going on in the tobacco industry and how dangerous that was. But in the 60s and that rough and tumble era of football, Jim, I'm telling you, I just couldn't believe how unaffected those guys were about it. Like, they're not – that photo is – they don't – some of them almost kind of don't understand why it's so huge, you know, and I think that's the story of it. It's just like it was so common to them that photo feels unremarkable to them.
It's an amazing story, and I love the part, too, that you spoke to Jan Stenerud when he joined Kansas City in 66 and that he was having his tryout. Dawson stops by, and, I mean, these guys were smoking on the sideline during games, but even better, Therese, when that stadium opened up, they had ashtrays in the lockers.
Yes.
How incredible is that?
I heard that, and I just about doubled over. I was like, they had them installed into the locker. Yeah. And you know, that was like considered like an upgrade feature.
Right.
It was an upgrade feature. It's like guys would come in like, oh yeah, we got our ashtrays in the locker. Okay. The Chiefs are doing it big. Okay.
Like, dude, have you seen their facility? Have you seen the facility, man? That these guys have ashtrays in the locker. Built in ashtrays, dude.
It's insane.
That's where I want to be.
And you know what? Freddie Bilisnikoff used to smoke on the sideline, too. Like, guys were smoking on the sideline. It was crazy.
Why not just do it in the huddle? Why not while you're running your route? Why not during the play? Be the best. Senior NFL writer for Yahoo, Hall of Fame voter, co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. He is Therese Paylor. Therese, great job, man. Thanks so much.
Oh, anytime, Jim.
That was fun.
Thanks,
good job, as always. Hey, listen, I'm not here to come down on these guys, because it was a very different time. I mean, smoking was glamorous then, right? I just love this notion that they thought that was some kind of an upgrade, you know? Like, when you see colleges right now try to recruit, you know, the big time programs, and you see the facilities, and you see the lounges, and you see the flat screens in the lockers, and then you think about the Chiefs in the 60s and the ashtrays in the lockers. And you never forget that cover of Sports Illustrated with Richie Allen smoking that cigarette in the dugout. Incredible. I will get to all of that, because part of episode 6, and I mentioned Mike, you know, this is not just like Mike with a cigar in his mid-50s next to his tumbler. Mike always seemed to have a cigar, and not just on the golf course, not just after winning a championship. Like, my man always seemed to have a cigar, and I'm fascinated by that. And I'm not, and don't at me, cigar guy. I like a cigar. I really do. I'm just talking about a high-level elite athlete who's got to get up and down 40-plus minutes a night, smoking as many cigars as he did. I'm fascinated by it. So I will get into all of that as well. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Always like chopping it up with my guy, Therese Paylor.